Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
Pretty nice. That was Angie Matson with Cool Water. And you can check her out at angiematson.com, and that's from her latest LP. So do check her out. Extraordinary sound. That's from her newest LP called Skeleton Arm. Do check it out. There's a multitude of great music in there. She's a great artist. And welcome to When Pigs Fly. And of course, this is Andrew Fetter. Or at least I think it's Andrew Fetter last time I looked in the mirror. And I want to thank you all for listening in, and all those future listeners and past listeners and everything. First, before I go in, I still want to give out my thoughts and prayers to those who have been affected by the recent earthquake activity, in particular in Japan and elsewhere, where there was another one now. Recently, had another tremor. And also, of course, those who were affected in the New Zealand one, since we're getting a multitude of earthquakes lately. And here, and then also in Mexico, they just had one. So things are really happening on our planet. There's a lot of shifts, I guess. But I still empathize, which comes into the area where I'm going to be talking about, which is called compassion. But before I get into that, there's a brief announcement I wanted to make, and that's regarding Intense Impact's concerts that they're happening in the AU and New Zealand. Do check them out. They have Quiet Riot, Warrant, and LA Guns ready to bash into Australia and New Zealand this April and May. They will be in April, for example, on Friday 29th at the Palace in Melbourne. And then on the 30th of April, they're going to be in the act at NU Bar. And then they head on to Auckland, New Zealand, at the Power Station. And then they head back, and I think they will be also at the Tivoli in Brisbane. And that's on the 6th, that's on the 7th of May. And then at the Metro, they're going to be in Sydney. You do got to check that out. Tickets are moving very quickly. I understand if you go to their website at intense-impact.com, there's links to where you can access your tickets. But there's also a thing you also check out, because I've recently seen they're also having a top two contest, where one of which is where you get to hang out with the bands if you win. But there's also multiple prizes, including, I understand, some different 15-some-odd items, and those are just some items, tattoos, you name it, there's a list. Go there, go to intense-impact.com, and if you click onto their FB Facebook page, there has a link to all the contacts activity. Do check that out. It's going to be one-in-a-lifetime event with all these three major metal bands together inside Australia and New Zealand. So do check it out, all you Aussies and Nizzeds. And getting into some, there was a famous quote, getting into compassion, that Budo had once said, and actually he said several talking about compassion, but one of them is, he had said, have compassion for all beings, rich and poor alike. Each has their suffering. Some suffer too much, others too little. So what is the areas of compassion? It's consistently being utilized in different forms and people talk. It's a common expression when it comes into spirituality, and of course with you showing some kind of love toward another person or a situation, the person's situation. But by definition, when you look it up, and what compassion literally means from a dictionary point of view, it literally, its definition, means sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering and misfortunes of others. So there's a connection between a feeling of somebody who is in a suffering position. That's very important to understand when I get into this concept and delve into this area. So, Buddha, though, had also once said, teach this triple truth to all, a generous heart, kind speech, a life of service, and compassion are things that which it renew humanity. Actually, those are four things. I don't know why I said three. It shouldn't be triple. It shouldn't be quadruple, I guess. But whatever. I guess Buddha can make a mistake. But it was interesting that this is very much indeed the truth of when you look into an overall situation within humanity. And I'll get to a reason why compassion is the vehicle to what he is trying to express. And people are losing point of what compassion literally is. Thinking it's all kumbaya, and it's not. It's a different element. But I will get into all that. But first, before I get into compassion into itself, one would need to look at the very concept of what suffering is. And in reality, what suffering really isn't within the universe. And I want to reemphasize the very reason you are, first, before getting to that, what suffering is. So you, why are we in these bodies in the first place? Why are we on Earth? And these reasons are indicative of the reality of the universe, not of a matter of faith or belief, but actually what is and just. And this is why I'm getting to this, because it leads into the understandings of what the compassion is, and it gets you to understand what in reality what suffering is, and what reality what compassion is. When you see these from this point, from the universe's point of view, outside your little box, then you understand what it really is. First, we are only in these bodies for four simple reasons. And they intertwine, by the way. To heal ourselves. We're in our bodies just to heal ourselves. We're here in our bodies to learn. We're here in our bodies to love. We're here in our bodies to experience. And of course, these concepts morph into one in reality, back and forth, almost like a blurring effect, almost like between what one would say particle and wave is a blur, or in relativity and understanding of time and space and so on. Because there's no real duality with anything. In fact, it's a symbiotic relationship as much as everything in our universe is. In fact, there is no duality. It's actually a symbiotic relationship in everything and every concept, because they're so connected, interconnected with one way or form. So now bear with me with these concepts. We are here to hear ourselves, to heal ourselves by the actions and choices and experience we have. We have co-created and chosen, with the cooperation, of course, the universe, all that we are indeed experiencing and will experience. These opportunities give us other opportunities to heal, to grow, to love, and experience. So, these experiences give us the opportunity to learn, to gain wisdom and understanding, which indirectly also develops our healing process. We have the opportunity to experience, the opportunity to love, to learn to love, and what love is. But also becoming both an awareness of our beauty within the what it love is, by being aware of ourselves, the beauty within ourselves, and it owns our self-worth, and are outwardly toward the realization that we are also connected to each and everything, including each other. We have also have the opportunity through a divine co-choice with the universe to experience a romantic love, which in itself is a healing experience between two souls experiencing a further element of connection. Love, in essence, is the connection. And I'm talking about real love. That is the true love, which is there is no agendas which are applied, because true love is unconditional. Now, we also experience many things by our perspective, through our perspective. This is where our perspective is not necessarily a reality, but it's our assumed reality. Or some people may say the reflection of what you assume is what it is. So, with suffering, you see, in reality, it is a perspective of one's experience, not the reality from within the universe. It's only from the person suffering that assumes from that perspective that he or she or whatever is actually suffering. But in the universe's eyes, you're not suffering. It is what it is. Because the universe is absolutely perfect in every way. It is only out of the small perception that there is actually suffering. And I'll give you an example how it is a perception in everyone's point of view. I'll give you an example. There's a bacteria is now forming upon your leg, giving you much suffering. You are suffering. That bacteria is just going after your leg, going after that tissue. But that bacteria is some happy camper, eating up your cells, tissue, while you're in agony and suffering and in pain. You now call a doctor, and the doctor treats it with, let's say, an antibiotic. And the antibiotic attacks the bacteria. Well, you yourself are now happy because you're no longer suffering, but now the bacteria is suffering, isn't it? The question now is, do you have compassion for the person or the bacteria? See, if the person is suffering from that bacteria, then your compassion is only for the individual. But if the bacteria is one now suffering because now you give an antibiotic, you probably wouldn't give a compassion toward it because you don't feel a connection toward it, which in reality is out of your perception and not the reality of the case. Thus, suffering is a perception, and it is very not a reality. This is points out to what the real concept of passion and what compassion is. And this is where people become, what I would say, selective compassion. And selective compassion is actually no compassion, because you're losing the point. The kumbaya nature of what's transparent and brought about through many, I've seen postings and people talking about compassion, have no clue what compassion is. They think it's all this, all kumbaya, love, love. But in reality, that's not the exercise of compassion. If you think about what even Buddha said in the very beginning, and I'll reiterate, and he was actually on target, what he was talking about. He says, to have compassion for all beings, rich and poor alike. He has, each has their own suffering. Some suffer too much, others too little. So he's talking about all souls and thinking, compassion of things. But isn't also compassion extends not just from souls, but all things in nature, all things in humanity, all things upon the universe. And I'm going to show you why, what that the reality of compassion is. Even in a sense, Buddha wouldn't even carry out to the full extent of what compassion is, but he did say certain things that did have underlying effect that does have the reality of what compassion really is. Unfortunately, even many people who call themselves Buddhists lose out what they think what compassion is, because they're looking at compassion toward another human being as opposed to another, let's say, animal, or toward even a plant, or toward the earth, or something they can't even see, or something that's even beyond their nature. And that's why I was going into the areas of perception of what suffering is, so you can see from the outside scope what in reality the relationship is. Because I'm also assuming that the compassion is toward the suffering. Okay? So before now, I go off on a different tangent, but I must emphasize first, one reason for someone who is suffering or being suffered or afflicted and what would, in their perspective or your perspective, be a bad or horrible thing is actually the opportunity you appreciate. So even though that person is now suffering, or you think as a suffering, or as in a situation that's not so great, it brings into an area of opportunity of appreciation. And this is really important, because it's not an aspect that's often, it is talked about, but it is interrelated too when it comes toward a compassion and a compassionate mind, if you want to call it that. Because now I'm broad scoping. Let me say, if you can walk and you can see, but now you lost your job and have no money. So what does this mean to you? You feel like you're in a bad situation, unfortunate, possibly suffering in some nature. But when in reality, the opportunity has been given to you by God, Allah, or the universe, or whatever nomenclature you want, because these are all what I said are the same. But you do can see and walk. So losing your job and money, it goes, sets you back, and you say, oh, well, thank you, universe, or God, or Allah, or whatever. I can walk and I can see. I still have these things. It's showing appreciation and simply saying thank you. Being thankful when you see something less fortunate or suffering. This is another aspect when you see something that in your mind the person is intentionally not in a good situation. Okay? This is an opportunity for each of us to be thankful and in being grace. This grace or thankfulness is our opportunity to what? To heal. Because we have now shown our love to the universe by our grace, our connecting understanding. That's the wisdom and understanding. Now, I get back to what Buddha had said, which associates with compassion. And he has said, I reiterate, have compassion for all beings, rich and poor alike. Each has their own suffering. Some suffer too much, others just too little. But having compassion, in reality, feeling the other one's perspective, this is associated with some sort of love. When you see, the first thing somebody thinks of when you see, you know, like I just mentioned, I said my thoughts and prayers go out to those people who have been afflicted by the earthquake. Right now I'm sitting in another country, not affected at all. Now, those people I extend to who are now suffering in their eyes. Of course, in their eyes, in reality, we know, I just said the universe in their eyes doesn't. It's they're not suffering. It's indicative of a perspective of who's suffering. But me as a soul, my extension of what now is of a compassionate nature, by saying, oh, you know, connecting their feelings and knowing how they feel and empathizing them. That is the action of compassion. And so it's really an understanding. It's not, oh, I'm going kumbaya, love, and all that stuff. It's showing a deep understanding of connection, which is an extension of what real love is. Love, which is in reality, as I mentioned, is our connecting action with other souls and the universe. It is our awareness. This is the compassion. And this is the result of the connecting implication and action of connecting and feeling those who are suffering with empathy. This is where that love is. Because what does love do? When you say you love somebody, are you just getting, oh, goosebumps, and I feel, God, I have this euphoria? Or if you're really in love, it's actually feeling that other person, feeling how they feel, connecting. When the act of actually making love, when a couple make love, and I'm not going to say get into sexuality of, you know, hetero or homosexual or bisexuality or whatever. But when two souls are into each other and love each other, and they do make love, not for just a sexual nature, the very physicality of them, one going in something into something else. And holy, that is the connection. That's two, physiologically, they're becoming connected to one. It's almost like the universe saying, see here, now you are physiologically together. It's giving you an example, a physiological way through sexuality to connect to your other person. And yet you're both being excited and feeling that kumbaya. But if there is a love connection between the two, a true nature of love, that will pull them even further. And this gets into perhaps what the Kama Sutra or whatever, the tantric love, some people call it. That is what that emphasis is, a connection. So the connecting force of love is what it is. It's when I see a tree and I feel that tree, and you look at that tree and you can just feel the energy of that tree. You feel and you connect with that tree. You're getting that, you're connecting with that loving energy of knowing that very tree that you're looking at. Or the animal, or the cat. That is the connecting nature of love. When you look into that, your child, you have a connection. When the child is growing within the womb of the woman and she's already connected, it's within her, that connection. That's what's connection. It's not that's kumbaya in all this fuzzy in love thing. That is like your physiological buzz, and that's pushing up your frequency, allowing you it's the after effect of the connection. Being in love with that person is because you absolutely feel that deep connection. It's overwhelmingly. And when they say, oh, I'm now out of love, it's because you have now in your perception, assume that you've now been disconnected. Yet in reality, you're in connection. But you are not feeling the other person's feelings. You're not extending yourselves as into a oneness nature, which is a different situation. So an underlining tone of love is, in reality, a connection of souls with other souls. And of course, there's different levels of it because it's so broad, and I'm, you know, giving examples, but there's also, you know, broad strokes. Nothing ever is divine. It's sort of like, it's somewhere there. It's sort of, like in quantum physics, they don't say, this is exactly here. It's approximately, it's somewhere around here. It's like the little electrons flying around, the protons in an atom, they, and neutrons, they're like, the atom, you don't know exactly where the electron is. It's somewhere around here. So that's sort of the same thing. And when I'm talking all these concepts, by the way, there is that same thing. It's a concept. It's like water. And I'm putting it into a cup. I'm not creating a cup first and putting the water in. I already have the water and I have the cup. And I put the water in the cup so that you can actually see the water itself move. And I pour the water into another cup so you can see the water flow out. So it goes into another concept. I take the water, I splash it on your face, and now you can feel the coolness of the water. Okay? I take the water and I put it in a freezer and I cool it, so now you can see how the water now tightens. So I'm showing you different elements of the similar things, but in different forms of different perspectives, but they all are coming into one of the same nature. And this is what I'm elaborating within compassion. You have to look like it as a concept of what? And this is what I'm relating to when it gets into the area, what in reality, what it really is. It's a basic form of getting into, it's a love, loving connection. And that love or kumbaya or whatever nature in reality, as I mentioned, is a connection between all action within all souls and the universe. It is our awareness. This is the compassion. It's basically creating that awareness of this connection, which I'm trying to re-emphasize in different ways. With the feeling of the suffering, you are now emphasizing this, and we emphasize this with through love. I feel the connection, and this is broadening itself into itself. And this is giving us a broader understanding that we are truly more connected than we think. It's becoming more aware. This gives us what, when we find get more discovery of our divine connection, wisdom of our infinite connection. This action, what it does then, is a healing experience. That what does what? Raises our frequency, which increases our being to a higher energy, thus opening more possibilities and more awareness and more wisdom and even more, perhaps more experiences, because our own perceptions have been increased due to our healing and increasing frequency. It's like the perceptions that you see are limited based upon your frequency. If we were able to perceive more than that's out there, that is also based upon our perception. Things are coming to us from upscale, but you don't see it with your own eyes. You hear things. Now you feel something. Now you become more aware of some things. There's more, so much data of information coming to us, but we're not allowing it because we've limited ourselves and our perception by keeping ourselves at a certain frequency. But as your frequency would increase, you become aware of more things. Why is Einstein suddenly, did he discover and figure out something than perhaps the average person? Because his frequency increased through awareness. How is a scientist? Do you think of somebody who is a genius? They're not a genius. They don't have a bigger brain physiologically than you. They're the same thing as you. But what happened is they've increased their frequency in a small element. But at the same time, I can show you scientists that have lessened their frequency. So they actually think they've discovered something, but in fact, just created their own illusion of what they thought they found out. And there's a lot of examples that within I find within in the sciences of today. which I've had many other scientists come on my show, and when I got back to the areas of what they've come upon, then they're all of a sudden, I hold up a mirror and go, oh, wait a second. So I'll give you an example. Why are you using a finite methodology when you just said the universe is infinite? When you use an infinite methodology to figure out the infinite universe, it would be like taking a cup and me just scooping one thing of water. If I take a finite cup, and the water, this ocean is a mass, let's say beyond, who knows how far extended the ocean is, and I just take one glass from the ocean, that's our science. Then they look and they observe the water in this damn cup. But they have no clue what the ocean is. The ocean's moving around, right? There's more living creatures in that one little cup. There's more things going on in the ocean. There's the sand on the bottom. There's things above the water, the air. There's things that happen within the water, the ocean. And there might be a different, one area where we scoop that water might be cold and another place warm. And that's the problem of sciences today. And this is the problem of basically humanity. We keep on consistently look at things in a more finite aspect instead of the reality and looking at things in infinite aspect. And I get into this with a lot of people when they ask me about, for example, Kabbalah. And the first thing I try to get into them, the first foundation to understand, before they all want to look at the mysteries and stuff, they all want to know the mysteries of Kabbalism, but they don't have the foundation. In fact, there's a lot of things that are purported out. I mean, I've seen things coming out from areas, and I'm not going to, from certain centers that say they're teaching Kabbalah or teachers, and I see people say, oh, I'm teaching, showing Kabbalah. In reality, they don't even have any clue of Kabbalah because they don't have the foundation. They're not thinking and seeing the reality within Kabbalism, which is looking at things at all very much in an infinite way. When you look at an infinite way, that's the foundation. That is the foundation. It is in Hebrew, they call it the Ein Sof. In Taoism, it is the Tao. They're one. Taoism, by the way, in Kabbalism is exactly identical. Through my studies of I Ching, and that I can just tell you profoundly, they are absolutely identical. It's amazing. That's a whole other story, though. Anyway, like I said, so we have to look at what is the disconnect perception belief system of humanity. Many live, like I said, within a finite aspect, which has created a fishbowl effect. We've created illusions with our own cities and our culture. We've created illusions thinking that we're separate from nature, or even from the Christian point of view, and even Islamic, it's been extended to a separation of nature, that you are separate from a God, that you are separate from things, you're separate from people, that you are separate from all things. Hinduism does the same thing. It has a caste of separation. Buddha still has the same thing. It just says you can, it looks at things as still that you're a separation. If you get in the core within the truth within Judaism, which is Kabbalism or Taoism, or even in Wiccan or Shamanism, they all come out to the very sources of all things. And if the very essence is how we're all deeply connected. That is actually the core of all things. And then there's, of course, the clerics above within all aspects, whether it's in Judaism and even in a lot of aspects in Buddhism, definitely in Christianity, because from its get-go, it's already finite. And I hate to say, I'm just telling you straight how it is. And you can look at all the aspects of a lot of the clerics have made things into a more finite aspect because they are consistently looking things as God is out there, you are here. They look at concepts as in a finite way of looking at things. In actuality, like I said, concepts are like flowing water. It's just a concept. It's like water. You can't put the thing in your hand. But when you try to cup your hand and put the water in and assume that's the water, then that's where you have a problem. It's like I'm telling you how the apple tastes. I'm going to describe it with the apple taste. But while I'm describing it, when you bite an apple, you may have a different experience of the apple, so you have a different perspective of the apple. That, in essence, is the reality of our universe. That's what the point is. We all have our different perspectives, and we assume by eating that one experience that the relationship we have with that one item is everybody has it. Now, this gets into an aspect which I want to get into where I think it's important. The reason why I get into this, because it interrelates to what compassion and the connection and suffering and all that stuff. And the whole methodology of compassion and what the connection is. And if you're all familiar with the first book of the Bible or the first book of Moses or Torah, it's called Genesis, right? Or in Hebrew it's called Bereshit, which literally means creation. We have the story about Adam and Eve. Now, in the story of Adam and Eve, and there was never an Adam and Eve, and there was never an Eden. This whole story, by the way, is basically the shoulder relationship, besides between man and woman, in a concept story form, basically. Also was trying to show a relationship to humanity at large in relationship to nature. How we're really together. And then when we had choice, when Adam received the choice of being an Eve, regain knowledge by eating the fruit, right? It was explaining that out of our choice, we realize things are different and, we aren't one now with nature because we have choice. But we can now come back and choose to be, in reality, one with nature. Nothing has changed. We're still in the garden in Eden. Remember the story of Adam and Eve as they end up going into, they had thorns and things that were sort of kicked out of Eden. But that was not they were kicked out. They were put, they themselves were in an area of Eden, and they've always been in Eden. But now that they assume that they assume out of choice that they're no longer in Eden, that they now have, they're separate from nature. So now that they were separate from nature, they now had to feed themselves in a mannerism. They had to, till the soil and everything else, because they assumed they were separate. They had to manifest physiologically things for themselves, because it was us versus nature, man versus nature. That was that whole story. Man has consistently humanity think that we are separate from nature. We have to challenge nature. And this is the illusion where we have cities. We have cities that create this illusionary effect. Now, within the Zohar and Kabbalah, this very area of nature and the relationship to mankind and nature is a very detailed commentaries within the Zohar, which is one of the first primary books in Kabbalism, and it gets totally into it. The reason why it does it is extremely important, and it is absolute reality and the truth of where we are. Now, in Kabbalistical understandings, there's a reference to even a higher elevating soul, and I'm going to explain to this because I think it's sort of important, because in relationship, I believe there's other areas of other religious ways of looking at things. I know I believe in Hinduism, and I know in Taoism and Buddhism, they have a sort of same idea, and in Sufi Islam as well. I know amongst this, the Wiccans and shaman understandings, but there's a level some might call our understandings, but I'm going to give you in a point of view within the Kabbalistical way of looking things. So, because it's important, because when you see it, you can understand why the relationship of our connection with nature in real terms of our energy and systems. And then I'll get back into the understandings of compassion, and then you'll understand what I'm going at. So, it's important to understand, and I'll demonstrate how these understanding of Taoism and Buddhism, they all have different names, but in reality, they have the same understandings that I've just mentioned. Which is, I can literally do a whole story on comparative understandings between those three, which I may one day do. That would be a very fascinating thing, but I know enough about Taoism understandings and Kabbalah, but I don't have enough of Buddhism. Hopefully I do, but anyway. The level, or often referred to, and I'm getting into a Kabbalistic way of looking things, there are different levels of the soul. And starting from the lowest element, it's called Asiya. And this is where we are right at this level here, where people look at things at this frequency. We live in a kind of material existence. We look at, you know, it's, we're looking at us separate. We look at to get money, to pay for, buy clothes. We've created this illusion that the economic monetary system is Asiya. We've created this perceptual, again, by the way, these are our perceptions, our lower frequencies. We created these little bubbles of society and humanity, which extends into our perceptions of what we assume are. So that is the lowest level of existence, which humanity has been there for a long-ass time. So, long-ass time in humanity's way, but in the universe, you're like, we've been like a bleep, okay? The next level, which is important, which gets into what they call Adam, which in which ironically, it's not put in the Sefirot, which I'm really amazing. It's not put on the tree. There's a tree that shows the levels. For some reason, it's not even placed in there. But when you say there's a book called Books of Light, it's constantly emphasized, and it's constantly emphasized within the Zohar. And I think there's a reason why they didn't put it in there, is because when you get into it, it gets into the reality of what things are. And when it's taught to other people, but when you get into the concepts of understandings within Kabbalism, it is so much emphasized. So when one connects into Adam's level of frequency, one is connecting to nature, to things around them. And one is connecting within the natural aspects of compassion through connecting to nature through things. The soul has an unconditional love, a compassion toward connection. You're connecting like an atom. That's what it meant. You're all with an atom within all aspects of the nature, with animals, with all beings. You have divine compassion. This is where that compassion is. This is the first step, in fact, across of compassion and connection, by connecting to all things within our that we physiologically see or feel around us or are aware of. The only one in the Bible has even reached a state, and I'm saying at this state even, is Daniel in the Bible. And you can't go skip a step. You have to be at that step. So Adam, in reality, at this level, per the Bible, I'm including Jesus and everybody. I'm including you in the Quran. I'll throw you in the Quran with Muhammad. Daniel was the most divine person. He was the only one that was so connected. That's why he was not eaten by the lions. He was so connected with a loving, compassionate means of toward all people, including the king that put him there. He had no hate. He had an unconditional love for everything, because he was already aware of the deep connection in all things. The next aspect, which is very important, is Yetzirah, and this is the level of the angels, and this is where we often go into the guiding dimension, which is known as dreamscape. When we sleep, we go into astral projection. So there are times, by the way, when you can slip between the Adam into the Yetzirah for a bleep. But we're never totally, if you're always totally at that level, you literally wouldn't be physiologically in this area, okay? Just to let you know, you would sort of spin off. That's when you pass away, you'd go into that Yetzirah level, because this is where the level of, when you go into total dream state, you're only there for a multitude. You are connected always there. All these areas are all connected, and like I said, these are all concepts, they're not concrete. There are aspects. So when you have an Adam nature, you can feel connection with that animal for that minute time, you will have that connected Adam experience. So when you sleep and you go into that dream state, I'm talking when you stay there, then you're permanently there. The only ones who's been permanently there, like I said, was Daniel. Yetzirah is when you go into Dreamscape and the Merkava, the astral projection. You connect with your guides, channeling. That's at the Yetzirah area. When you go into Bira is the ultimate of creation. This is where manifestation is. This is you manifesting thoughts. This is where they say that the archangels are in those dimensions. This is where nothing becomes something. One of the empty bowls comes forth through the thoughts, and that's where that is. Then finally, there's the Atzilut. And this is where your frequency is a very, very high level. It is, in fact, an existence so high that actually this area, this is where it's said, according to the in Kabbalistical understandings, angels cannot rise up to do not have the opportunity to rise up into this frequency because they don't have choice, where human souls have choice. And this is also where the cherubim, the little baby angels, you want to call it, dwell, because there's an aspect that says this level, the soul is but a child. And of course, the highest extension of level is when you're totally connected in awareness of ultimately with the universe and God itself. So now, I know I got a little bit out of tangent getting into these aspects, but I was trying to get you to back into core of the connections of why these levels are flowing or whatever, and to the atom thing, but I felt I'll throw in a little understandings of Kabbalistical stuff, just for your own food for thought. Now, getting back to compassion, it is in reality how we connect to one another and to the universe. It is the awareness. If humanity had compassion, what and where would humanity be? I mean, if humanity was simply aware of the Earth and our connection to her, if humanity was aware of the connection between all souls, where would we be? Our connection to the universe at large. What would happen if we indeed had compassion? We would have an awareness, thus the unconditional love of all souls and beings and all elements of Earth and our universe. This is the way of compassion. This is the compassion methodology. What it is, compassion, is simply to connect, to feel all things. Seeing the other, by seeing somebody else's perceptions in reality, is connecting. You're connecting. You're realizing the empathy. You're feeling their pain. So therefore, you become the awareness that we are divinely connected. It's giving you the process of connection. You're seeing their perception, their way of thinking. You're connecting to how the other those their aspects and how they feel. This is compassion. This is how they feel. This is how they would feel within the universe. Now, some might say, well, why doesn't a tiger have compassion for the calf after he's killed and eaten it? Or how do you know the tiger is not? Because a tiger itself is not separate from nature or the universe. It does not need a methodology to have compassion, for it is already, it has no illusionary wall separate. It doesn't think. You do not know. It is already one with nature. It is a cause and effect. Humanity, on the other hand, has a problem. We've created this illusionary wall. So we've had to have needed a methodology to reconnect, to redissolve this illusion. So in a way, compassion is that solvent to remove that illusion. So if you see someone in less fortunate than you, or feel a person perceiving suffering, you have empathy. This is your opportunity to heal, to love, to learn, to connect, and to experience. I mean, there's multiple examples that there is no compassion and therefore there's hate and division. I can show you across everywhere in humanity. If you look at it, what it is, you look in the Middle East, between Muslims to I'll tell you straight up, look at the Muslim mentality across the Middle East. Why there is so much violent hate? Why they get all upset when somebody does something? The first react, because they're living in a non-compassionate way. They think themselves separate. So they think it's the other guy. They hate the Jew. They hate the Christian. And I'm going to say the Christians can do the same thing. Or perhaps there are some Jews who do the same thing. I'm saying overall, there is even a plethora of it. There's more of it. It is what it is. You see, there's more violence, more hatred. And there's no excuse. You can't. And those who sympathize for one thing is, again, sympathizing to the aspects of division and hate. You're saying, oh, well, they hate because. No, no. Or they think they're divided because. No, no. There's no excuse for it. It is what it is. There's perception. And this is not just within the Middle East. You look in Africa right now, the Ivory Coast or the Sudan, or look in Libya or Egypt. I can go all over across the Africa. I can go all across, like in Asia, with, you know, look at within even in India with the caste system and levels and this person. And then with the Pakistanis and Afghanistan. And I can go into the Americas. I can go to Latin America. I can go especially into Europe. I mean, they still think, they're in Europe maybe so liberal, but look what's happened. They still think of a hate. They still think with division. It's always them. I read on constantly on posts on from, you know, whether it's David Icke. He's not a person of compassion. That's always them. Or somebody like Alex Jones, it's them. That's not connecting. That's not connecting. That's not a path of being connecting. That's the opposite. That is of hate and of division methods. That is opposite of what, like, Buddha was trying to put out. That is opposite even what Jesus was trying to profoundly put out. This is opposite what is found within all the Kabbalistical understandings that was put out by from the Ari and all the Kabbalists. This is opposite from all the Taoist teachers from Confucius. This is opposite what, from the Sufi Islam. This is opposite. So when you see somebody who is perhaps less fortunate than you, and you feel that person's perception, there's an empathy there. This is what I'm getting into. So you can see the aspects in all areas and all nature, even amongst yourselves. If you see within amongst yourself that there are people who have tried to contact and try to relate to what you to connect what you are in your own little world that you think is there, your fishbowl. If you connect to your fellow worker, your employer, if you connect to the person who you see on the street who may be blind, or the homeless who's sitting there with a cup, that even the feeling of compassion, sympathizing, feeling them, or perhaps even not just the humans. Why is it limited to just the souls of humans? How about the animals that are suffering because of humanity? Look at what we've done in the Gulf, the birds, the fish, the whatever, the things that we don't even see with our own naked eyes, the bacteria, even in whatever they are, that's the compassion, the connection, to realize that we are all deeply connected. When we see how divinely connected we are, that is the healing experience. That is what allows us the opportunity to realize with having true understanding and gain wisdom, and therefore opening up more doors of greater experiences. Why do you need to experience the same old thing over and over? Because you haven't learned yet the lesson. Why do you think we keep on coming back over and over in these lifetimes? Because we didn't get it. We haven't learned that we are connected. Even me, everybody, no matter what, I'm in this body because I haven't learned yet. That's why we're here. We're all students. We need to learn. And if you don't learn, guess what? You keep on recycling the same crap. And people go, gee, how come my life is like this all over again? Oh, cry, 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 cry. Because you didn't get it. Why do you keep on seeing the getting in a relationship with the same bad person or have the same things? Why do you need to go and feel that only way that'll solve your problems is put a bottle down and suck down some liquid or take that bong and take that hit or shoot that thing up your arm? Why do you think you need to go and hate that person so much that you have to go destroy their property or inflict pain or violence? Why do you think you need to go send a rocket into a school bus to kill some little kid or attempt to kill a little kid who you hate because of what? You think you're separate? They're the same thing as you. And then what reaction? And then a person sends more rockets the other way. And then you're upset by how come they're sending rockets. They're because we're all connected. You cannot say that this land, here's the ultimate illusion, the ultimate facade of humanity, is we actually think that we own land. Here's the most retarded thing you ever. And guess what happens every time we think we own land and we own nature? This is where it comes into the earthquake. Earth, the universe, keeps on going, hey, buddy, humanity, you fools, you think you own this land? The land is shaken and people lose everything, their homes, this, their nuclear plants fall. The thing that happened in Japan wasn't for Japan only, it was for all humanity. It was it's consistent, these volcanoes, all these things that happen, the tsunamis, all these are giving us opportunity of compassion toward those who are suffering, but giving a lesson that another one, realizing having compassion to Earth, the connection toward Earth, that we are not separate from Earth, that we do not own land, we do not own a piece of Earth. That is our own facade that we've manifested through our own, our little economical controls from thousands of years, thinking that we actually own something when in reality we don't. In reality, what happens when you're dead? They stick you in the ground, your body deteriorates, you're in a coffin or you've been cremated. Then what? What do you own in reality? You're dead. You own nothing. You know that car you have? That's just a lease. The land you are sitting on is a lease. You're leasing it from the universe. Where you breathe and eat is a temporary lease. That's why there's grace. You say, thank you. That's why it comes up. Oh, I'm eating this, thank you. Those are why those concepts of prayer come in effect. Those are the reasons why they're done. It's not to say, oh, I love God and all that. It's just showing grace for the things that you do have. And it's a showing that we are only renting this area. We're temporary here. In divine right, we are having the opportunity to heal each other and heal ourselves at the same time. We have these opportunities, but we're not utilizing them. We have the opportunity to actually fix our problems at the very moment, but we don't listen. We don't listen to Mother Earth because we have no compassion for Earth. If we had compassion for Earth, we'd be listening what Earth is telling us what and how to fix our problem very moment. We don't need to have wars and killing each other and hate and all the stuff that goes on. We don't need to worry about energy and all that if we worked with Earth. We wouldn't have all these issues. There's going to be always going to be something, but we can certainly diminish them in a great amount of way by simply having compassion, connecting, unconditional love, and understanding that we are divinely connected to all things. And coming to realization that suffering is in reality the perception. And really the reaction. And really it is just the opportunity for us to realize how divinely connected we are. The universe is absolutely perfect in every aspect. Think about it. What is gravity holding us on Earth? But then a greater force of keeping our bodies together physiologically is a thing called electromagnetic forces that keeps the atoms together, which is stronger than electromagnetic energy, is actually stronger than gravity. Because if it wasn't created, then we'd be a blob. Look how things are set up, how perfect they are, how the worlds revolve one around the other, how the atoms connect to each other, how energies, they're absolutely perfect. This is what they call the creator. This is coming to the being of understanding that, yes, there is a God, but it is all of us that are God. All our thing is God. I did a whole show about it. Not a separation of God. That part gets into the areas of, again, a finite mentality. We are not finite. We are infinite. We're infinitely connected. Our perceptions assume the finite. And therefore, disconnection, our feeling where we cannot see, which we can utilize, is our connection, our opportunity of having compassion, the feeling of connection between all those around us. So if you see someone who is less fortunate than you and feel that person's perceived suffering with empathy, this is your opportunity to heal, to love, to learn, to connect, and experience. And as Buddha had said, well, he said four things, but I'll quote him again. He said three. Teach this triple truth to all. A generous heart, kind speech, a life of service, and compassion are all the things which renew humanity. Renew humanity as a rebirth of humanity, humanity at large. Because we are not just individual souls. We are all part of each other. Yet we are all individual souls. Just like particle wave. Just like concepts. We're all connected. Everything forms, and there's always a reaction to every reaction, and an action to another action, which is a reaction. So I hope you understand what humanity, what compassion really is, and how, why it has been given us the opportunity to utilize in order to get a greater understanding of things about us. And how that compassion can actually achieve a greater humanity at large and a greater human soul that you are. Because you all humans and all areas and all souls and everything divinely, no matter what you think, are great and beautiful. And everything is absolutely perfect. And with that, truly want to thank everybody for listening in. God bless you all, and have a glorious, glorious day. Thank you, and God bless you.